Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Grace Curley Show. I just saw this cut. I didn't ask Jared to pull it, but that's why he's the best at what he does. He pulls things just knowing that I'm going to want to go to it. And this is, I believe her proper title is Governor Stacey Abrams, right?
Governor President of United Earth, Stacey Abrams.
Ah, rightio. Okay, so Governor President of Planet Earth, which, by the way, happy belated Earth Day to Stacey Abrams. She was on MSNBC. And I'm actually surprised, Jared, that she doesn't have a gig there yet. Maybe that means she's still...
Well, she's going to give up her public office before she does that.
Yeah, you're right. She can't moonlight.
They're going to take one more shot at Kemp, I guess, before she can do that.
She has more jobs than Kamala Harris and Joe Biden combined. So Stacey Abrams, she's on MSNBC. And you don't even need to know what the topic is, because the topic in a lot of ways on these shows is always the same. It's throwing out these very vague, scaremongering statements about democracy and how it's in peril. It's all the time. It's democracy is in peril 24/7 TV. And so who better to bring on than election denier Stacey Abrams? And I got to play you this because she's warning us about something that I wasn't aware of. She's sending out the warning signs. This is cut 14.
We have to remember that every victory, built into every victory, are the seeds of defeat, but also built into every defeat are the seeds of victory. We have seen victory, but we cannot rest on that victory and think that it is impermeable and impervious to harm. What we know is that the attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, is an attack on democracy, it's an attack on education, it's an attack on how our economy works. Because what Reverend Warnock and John Ossoff, what Senator Ossoff and Senator Warnock represent are pathways to the American dream. They are proof points. And those proof points scare those who want this world to be more narrow and more restrictive. And so we have to recognize that our opportunity to hold to those successes requires our constant attention, our constant tending. You know, voting is not magic. Voting is medicine. But it also means that it's a constant engagement, that we can't have a moment of success. We have to keep working constantly at moving ourselves forward.
Those are a lot of buzzwords. That felt like one of those meetings they have at these big, giant companies where nothing gets accomplished, but people just talk all day long.
Yeah, what I love about that clip is because...
Do you love something about that clip?
It is everything that encapsulates the current Democratic Party and a lot of the political class, even the Republicans. It's buzzwords without conviction. And that's why she stumbled over it, because there's no conviction there. There's no true belief in
it. It was very Michael Scott-esque. Yes. Like the seeds of victory sow the seeds of defeat.
Fortune cookie wisdom.
Yeah, that also have the seeds of defeat. But also, if you plant them, then if you grow where you're planted, then you will find that the seeds that you grew have planted in a way that you have grown as well.
Yeah. It's very...
Need I say more?
It's very elementary, lack of conviction, fortune cookie, wisdom, buzzword, crap. But and it's the perfect encapsulation of today's political class, especially on the left.
Can you play the beginning of that for me one more time?
We have to remember that every victory, built into every victory, are the seeds of defeat. But also built into every defeat are the seeds of victory. We have seen victory, but we cannot rest on that victory and think that it is impermeable and impervious to harm. What we know is that the attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, is an attack on democracy.
Okay, so I have a few things I want to get out. Sorry, the way that sentence was formed, it really has me kind of in a fog here. In the fog of war, I'm trying to figure out what she meant. The seeds of victory, the seeds of defeat, all of this stuff leads us to this is an attack on democracy. So if you attack DEI, you're attacking democracy. And before we came on, I said to Jared, I was writing a list here of all the things that you do that can be perceived as an attack on democracy. if you let Trump on the ballot, for example. If you let people vote for a candidate that they want, that's an attack on democracy. If you don't censor real news stories, like in the New York Post, if you don't censor their real news stories about Hunter Biden, that in and of itself is an attack on democracy. If you allow people to have freedom of speech, that is an attack on democracy. I went to Jared and I said, remind me of some other things that are an attack on democracy. And Jared said, you'd be better off listing things at this point that aren't an attack on democracy because the list is so long. You did bring up exercise.
Exercise, I believe, is an attack on democracy.
If you just go to Google and type an attack on democracy, you will find it. But now DEI, attacking DEI or criticizing DEI, which there are so many valid reasons to criticize DEI, that is seen as an attack on democracy. I hope she's lecturing Al Roker about this, because last week we read how Al Roker's cartoon weather, I don't even know what it's called.
Weather chasers
that the production company, Al Roker's production company, was using DEI allegedly as just a box to check. They weren't taking it seriously enough. And Stacey Abrams is here to tell us that that is a threat to democracy. I also have another DEI story, which thank you to Governor President of the United States Earth, Stacey Abrams, for allowing me to read this. Former DEI director at Providence College, go Friars, baby, files discrimination charge. So this is in the Boston Globe today. And I just want to read you a couple of lines here. And I'm going to try to explain my overall takeaway. Jared, feel free to chime in with your thoughts. I know this is probably the first time you're hearing about this. The former head of Providence College's Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion program filed a charge of discrimination with the Rhode Island Commission for Human Rights against the institution on Monday. Now, if you want to see the whole thing, you can go to the Boston Globe. I don't know if you'll be able to get through the paywall, but I'm just going to read some of the most pertinent sentences. E. Corey Cole, the former director of DEI at Providence, resigned on March 8th, sparking criticism from students and staff who accused the college of systemically oppressing LGBTQ plus individuals on campus. Now, Cole's 3.5-year employment with the college, where she held the first position in history to address LGBTQ plus inclusion, they experienced, because Cole is non-binary, they experienced direct, repeated, patterned, and systemic discrimination on the basis of their sexual orientation and gender identity. Now, it should be noted the school says these claims are unsubstantiated. They're going to do an investigation. But here are some of the major takeaways. According to Cole, there was a task force created to define Providence College's theological position on LGBTQ plus inclusion and designing the institution's process for responding to LGBTQ plus issues. During a committee meeting to discuss the members' bio for the college's website, Cole proposed a bio that began, "I exist in the intersections between Christian and queer, identifying with both the LGBTQ plus community and having been a campus minister through InterVarsity Christian Fellowship USA and a preacher, leader, and trainer in the local church for the past decade." Now, Cole says, when they submitted this to the staff, they were told, "You are too liberal for this college. You cannot identify as queer." Now, Providence College is late to the game compared to other schools in getting invested in this DEI, LGBTQ plus inclusion, intersectionality type thing. But I don't think they're crazy enough to say that back to somebody. "You are too liberal for this college. You cannot identify as queer." If anybody did say that, they definitely didn't write it down. Like, I doubt there's going to be an email where someone wrote that. But I wanted to talk about defining Providence College's theological position on LGBTQ plus inclusion. And let me just say this. I do not discriminate against anyone, especially with this show. I always want everyone to feel like there's a place for them to voice their opinions, no matter who you are, no matter what your stances are. I have no desire to make anyone ever feel unwelcome. But with that being said, people, professors, DEI coordinators, and institutions are all allowed to have their own belief systems, their own mission statements, their own, you know, moral compass or theological understandings. And it just seems to me that if you're running Providence College and you have friars all around campus, and Emma could speak to this with a little bit more conviction than I can, just because she has more background on this. Those two things, like the LGBTQ plus agenda. And the Catholic faith, they are inherently contradictory, I would guess.
I mean, the Pope released last week his, I can't remember what it was called, Statement on Dignity or something like that, which sort of softened the stance. But yeah, I mean, they do not align philosophically.
And trying to get them to align, trying to blur this line of like, oh, we all believe the same thing, we all believe... It doesn't make any sense. And I'm not saying you have to be hateful towards anyone. I'm not saying you have to be exclusionary towards anyone. But to try to reframe your school as something that it's just not, it to me makes no sense. And what it reminds me of is the abortion conversation when it came to the diocese in Boston not wanting to fund health insurance that was going to cover abortions. It's like, listen, if everyone wants to get abortions, that's okay, but you can't make people who think it's murder pay for it. You shouldn't mandate them to pay for it. It's like your opinions and your beliefs and your intersectionality and your diversity, that's all wonderful. But that doesn't mean you get to change every other institution or every other thing that you walk into. Does that make sense?
The world doesn't have to conform to you.
Right.
Like you have to, you know... Yeah, you know, it's the melting pot theory. Everybody's got to melt a little bit. You got to melt a little bit on this one. The world does not conform to you. If you choose to take a job with...
At Providence College.
Which is based in a belief system that has values that are different than yours, you can't be surprised when they don't mirror what you think. And the only thing I'll say about that is, what bothers me about that is if the reason that they resigned is because somebody said you're too liberal to work here. Give me a name. Give me a description. It's like an anonymous source. You can't just say, oh, an anonymous source said. No, it's going to be like, okay, an anonymous source who is on the Security Council, you know.
Called me a sucker and a loser.
Yeah, if it's that big a deal that you have to resign over it, give me a name. Give me a description. No, not just some vague eponymous, you know. No, they said I'm too liberal. This person said I'm too... Even if somebody just shouted it in a crowd, go find that person. Figure out who it was.
And like I said, I went to Providence College. I understand that they're definitely not as liberal as some schools, but I don't think they're also as out to lunch as to say to someone, you're too liberal, and not think they're going to get a lawsuit handed to them. Like, they understand how things work, I would guess.
Yeah, they have lawyers too, you know?
844-500-4242. I just wanted to talk about that because we don't talk about DEI a lot, but it's interesting to see how DEI in and of itself is becoming a massive issue for not just production companies like Al Roker's, but for institutions, for colleges, for universities who are trying to avoid this cancellation or this like getting axed by polite society. And then they end up in so much more trouble. It kind of, Jared, reminds me of ESG, where people are hoping to score woke points, and then they end up going out of business.
And not for nothing, if you get a job as a DEI director, like, you're pretty much untouchable. I mean,
just
don't cause any waves. Just roll with it and collect your check. It doesn't matter.
It is crazy. But I mean,
like the least fireable person.
As a friar, I have to say that Providence College has, if this is all true, then they are, by attacking DEI, they are ipso facto attacking democracy. And that is not something I thought I'd be saying today. I'll have to collect my thoughts on it.
I'm
going to
need
later.
A statement from Alec Baldwin about Providence College.
Alec, just denounce Providence College and I will let you get your mocha frappuccino. Just denounce it. Please. Face it, the world is a scary place. You probably have gathered that from listening to our show every day. It seems like the current administration is on a mission to make life more dangerous while at the same time making it harder for Americans to protect themselves. Luckily, FlipLock is here and can protect you and can protect your family. This is such a great invention. I was able to talk to the person who invented it, and I was so jealous. I told her, I'm so annoyed I didn't think of this because it's so simple. It's back to basics when it comes to securing your home. It doesn't require high-tech cameras. It doesn't require a lot of money or even Wi-Fi. It's just a really strong, it's actually 10 times stronger than a deadbolt, lock that's going to stop someone from breaking through your door. It can withstand over 1,500 pounds of pressure. So if you're like my mom and you call up your kids when they move out of the house and you say, did you deadbolt your lock? Did you lock the door? Is the door locked? This is something you can send your child or your grandchild and have peace of mind and know that they're safe and know that nobody is coming through that door. I love Flip Lock because it reinforces my door to protect my family from intruders. I also love that it's very accessible for people as far as price goes. This is not something that's going to cost you thousands of dollars, and security doesn't have to be expensive. It's wonderful if you can do all of that, but not everybody can. And this is a nice, reasonable way to protect yourself as a last line of defense against an intruder. So here's what I want you to do. Go to fliplock.com and save 20% with code GRACE20. That's FLIPLOK.com. Don't forget to use GRACE20 and you'll save the additional 20% off the already very reasonable price. This is a great device. I love it, and I think you guys will too. So make sure you check it out and tell me what you think. We'll be right back.
Hi, it's Toby from Cape Gunworks. I'm taking all your firearm and self-defense questions every Tuesday. Join Grace and me for 2A Tuesday, Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
This is the Grace Curley Show.
Today's poll question is brought to you by J.J. Manning Auctioneers. Whether residential, commercial, or land, J.J. Manning can get your property sold now. To learn more, contact Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or go to jjmanning.com. With over 16,000 sales and satisfied clients, you can be the next one. What's going on, Jared? What is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is do you think universities will move graduations to Zoom because of the peaceful protests?
Well, according to the Wall Street Journal, the University of Michigan, which is going to hold its commencement ceremonies on May 4th, is setting up designated areas for protests outside venues at many of its ceremonies.
Are they near the campus?
From what I'm gathering, from what I've been seeing of these peaceful protests, you know, with the flares and the signs that say all sorts of anti-Semitic things and the chants of from the river to the sea and death to America, I don't know if this group is going to abide by the designated areas. Like, isn't that the whole point of a protest, is that you see the area and you go, it's going to be more disruptive if we actually go in where people are getting their diplomas. Maybe they have more faith in the protesters than I do at Michigan.
Yeah, I don't know that obeying the rules is the strong point.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes. They're going to start moving things around. We're going to start hearing about Zoom graduations, which was such a success during COVID. I think that's going to be the case.
50% of the audience says maybe a handful of universities will move to Zoom. 32% say yes, and 18% say no.
Did you see there's this state polytechnic university in California, and they were having a pro-Palestinian protest, anti-Israel protest? And I really like this, Jared. It says, protesters inside the building were holding signs that read, "Help us, please. They are going to attack. They want to cut our Wi-Fi." They want to cut our Wi-Fi.
Sure, it wasn't Palestinian protesters.
It says the website said that some protesters went to the local courthouse in a show of solidarity with other activists who were earlier arrested. They are going to attack us. They want to cut our Wi-Fi. There are more of you than them, and push them out. And now I keep seeing these headlines. NYU students, for example, right now, this is ongoing. NYU students stage walkout at school to protest. To protest Bibi Netanyahu, like he gives a flying you-know-what about some college idiot at NYU. But whatever, put that aside for a second. You want to walk out? Walk out! Like, walk out, don't let the door hit you. You know the rest.
Quick, anybody who's interested in learning or getting a degree in an actual classroom, hurry in now. Now's the time to do it.
Hurry in and we'll shut the door. We'll lock the doors. Yeah, this whole thread of, like, we're going to walk out. Go ahead. Who's stopping you? I mean, is that a threat or a promise? Oh, boy. We'll be right back with more. Don't go anywhere. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. So as you all know, the hush money trial involving Donald Trump and Stormy Daniels, and sadly, Michael Avenatti's out of this. He's no longer part of the in crowd when it comes to the hush money trial. It's ongoing right now in New York City.
I think CNN has visitation with him coming up, though, so we may see him again.
Yeah, they get access to him. They just got to get the Zoom camera set up.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was MSNBC. My mistake.
I was going to say, if it was CNN, I could understand why they wouldn't want to do the Zoom camera because of how it's played out for them in the past. But
damn, Jeffrey Toobin. At least Pee Wee Herman was in an X-rated movie theater. I'm just saying.
Yeah, so this case is ongoing right now, and the media is covering it. Trump's, you know, capitalizing on any opportunity to talk to the press outside the courtroom. Last week, he talked about how he wouldn't be able to go to his son Barron's graduation from high school. Yesterday, a juror had a toothache or a tooth emergency, and then they had to kind of adjourn early and leave everything for the next day.
I mean, this is the roadmap if he wants to go to the graduation.
That's what Howie said.
Sorry, I got a toothache.
Did you hear
Gotta
Howie
go.
Say that yesterday?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, Howie said, I bet Donald Trump will have to get a root canal that day. Yeah, he should just have the old popcorn excuse, like, oh, I bit into a kernel. That's how it happened for me.
Or when George W. Passed out from choking on a pretzel.
Yes. That's what he needs. It's like when you go on a date and you need that backup call. Call me halfway through. Tell me there's an emergency, and if I take you up on it, I can get out of there. Not that I've ever done that, but people have done that. But yeah, I think Donald Trump will end up going to Barron's high school graduation. But everyone's watching this case because out of all the cases against Trump, and there's so many, and you know what Emma actually pointed me to today, which is very helpful. She should show it to Howie, too. It's Politico. I'm not usually a huge fan. I do check out their West Wing playbook every day. They've got a website that's just tracking all of Trump's different trials, and it tells you, you know, where they are in the cases and the strengths of the case, the weaknesses. But if you look at all of these, you've got the fraud case in New York, you've got the case in Georgia with Fannie Willis, Fulton County, you've got this, the hush money case. Out of all of the things pending against Donald Trump, this one is seen as the weakest across the board, not just by the Jonathan Turleys of the world, but by legal scholars on both sides of the aisle. They say this is thin gruel. This is really not passing constitutional muster. They really, Alvin Bragg had to slice and dice this thing up in a way to get it through, to create a case against Donald Trump, because the goal is just to get Trump at all costs. It doesn't matter how much you have to bend the law to do so. So Jonathan Turley was on Fox last night, and he seemed even taken aback. Knowing how bad it was going to be and how weak it was, he was stunned even so. So let's play Cut 15.
What is clear is in this case, Trump is right. I mean, this is an embarrassment. I mean, the fact that we are actually talking about this case being presented in a New York courtroom leaves me in utter disbelief. I mean, the arguments today did, in fact, capture all the problems here. You know, you had this misdemeanor under state law where that had run out. This is going back to related to the 2016 election. And they zapped it back into life by alleging that there was a campaign finance violation under the federal laws that doesn't exist. The Department of Justice doesn't view it this way.
Yeah, and they also, the first guy they brought out was the guy from the National Enquirer, and he's talking about a situation that doesn't even involve Stormy Daniels. And now I'm reading headlines that, you know, he warned Trump that if he was having relationships, it could come back to bite him. It's like, who the hell cares? Why are we talking about this? I understand why you would talk about this, like, at the club, having a glass of wine. Oh, did you hear this? You hear that? The guy from the National Enquirer. But, I mean, to bring this to a courtroom this many years later, when you've got such a weak case against him, it becomes very obvious that this is just a way to try to tarnish his reputation, and it's not going to work. If the guy can survive the Access Hollywood tapes, he's going to be able to survive this. Tarnish his reputation and really hamstring him during an election season where he can't go to important swing states. That's the goal here. And it's very, very obvious. I want to skip the next one. And I just want to go to Jonathan Turley talking about the split screen, because there was a sentence recently that I read in Politico. Again, I know they're getting a lot of play today, where they said the images of former President Donald Trump in court has been a great look for the Biden camp. Remember I read that, Jared, and I said, according to who? Like, or is it according to whom? You know I'm not great with those. But who is deciding that this is a great look? Because in my mind, it's a horrible look. You've got a former president who had this country on the right track dealing with all of this lawfare and all of these obstacles put in his way preventing him from campaigning. And then you've got another guy who's in the middle of the woods talking about how we have to understand the Palestinian POV and how he condemns the protests, the anti-Semitic protests, but, you know, and how he takes his cues from AOC. Like, in what world, what glasses do you have to have on to think that this juxtaposition, that this foil between the two plays well for Joe Biden? I just don't see it. And neither does Jonathan Turley. Cut 17.
This case should not have been brought. And if it were brought, there was no reason to have this right before the election, in my view. But this is becoming the split screen election. Right. Earlier, it was pretty damaging to see the split screen between Trump and different courtrooms. This is even more effective when the other side of the screen shows Biden campaigning in key states like Pennsylvania while he's held in this courtroom. It really brings home something that bothers a lot of Americans, including people who don't particularly like Trump, that this is the weaponization of the criminal legal system. It's something we should all be able to condemn. But in this age of rage, it just does not matter to many people.
Yeah, and I think something you could add on to that is this would be a ridiculous case being brought either way when you're talking about the guy from the National Enquirer and Stormy Daniels and the NDA and all this stuff that doesn't seem to rise to the level of bringing a former president to court. But when you couple that with the fact that there's so much madness going on, that there are so many things that New York City has to worry about, you know what it reminds me of, Jared? And this is where I need your help, because you're my sports guy. You're my right-hand man. Remember that scene in Miracle where one of the hockey players tries to defend the other hockey player and the coach says, "Why don't you worry about your own game? There's plenty there to keep you busy." That's what this reminds me of. It's like, this is... you've got so much to keep you busy right now, Joe Biden, and you're worried about the National Enquirer. You're worried about the hush money payments. And I know it's not Joe bringing the case, but it is. You know, in a way it is. He's using his DOJ. He's using all these far left DAs to attack Donald Trump when he's got plenty in his own game to keep him busy. You've got an open border. You've got all these rabid anti-Semites all across these college campuses. You've got inflation that people can't keep up with. You got gas prices. I heard yesterday in Howie's intro, gas prices $3.50. I think, I'm not sure, was it California that the audio is in? But you've got gas prices that are insane. You've got crime that's out of control. You've got wars breaking out all over the world because of your minor incursion remarks and things of that nature. And this is what you guys want to worry about? And then if you drill down even further and you go, okay, well, let's take out all of that noise, all of the world being set on fire, let's just focus on New York. Let's focus on Alvin Bragg and Kathy Hochul and Letitia James. You guys have a lot in your game to keep you busy as well. You've got people getting pushed into the subway. You've got young women being punched in the face on their way to work. This is what you choose to spend your time on? People will tell you a lot based off what they prioritize, what they choose to focus on, and what they choose to ignore. And there has never been a time where politicians have been so obvious about it. They are slapping, you know, no, they're punching you in the face with it. They're letting you know, this is where I'd rather spend your time and your money is on prosecuting and persecuting the former president because we hate him and we're scared of him and we don't want him to win, rather than doing anything to make the city better, to make the city safer, to make your commute to work a little less dangerous. To make it so if you're, like my sister, a 25-year-old girl in New York City, you're not constantly afraid someone's going to clock you. They don't want to focus on that. This is where they want to spend their time. What do we always say? When people tell you who they are, believe them. This is their priority. They want to let criminals out of prison before lunchtime and let them recommit and reoffend over and over and over again. And then they want to rile up their base of voters and try to convince them that Donald Trump paying money to Stormy Daniels before he even ran for president in 2016 is somehow the crime of the century. And honest to God, I oftentimes have very little faith in the voters. I don't think this is going to work. And a lot works, Jared. A lot works with the voters nowadays. Like, you can, I always go back to that, almost 60% of people said if they knew about the Hunter Biden laptop, if they knew it was real, they wouldn't have voted for Joe Biden. And I thought, well, we're in deep you-know-what, because there was plenty of ways to figure out it was real. You didn't have to be Inspector Gadget to figure that one out. But with this, even as little faith as I have in the voters in this country, I don't think this is going to work. I think it stinks to high heavens. I think people's quality of lives, the quality of life right now for most Americans is so much worse than it was 4 years ago that it's forcing them to wake up. It's forcing them to look at this split screen, as Jonathan Turley put it, and say, do I want to continue this? Do I want to continue this double standard? There's two systems of justice, and I don't think people want it. 844-500-4242. We'll be back. We'll take your calls on this right after the break. David Pecker from the National Enquirer, his testimony resumes today. Hopefully the toothache situation for one of those jurors is figured out, because that really held up everything yesterday. Listen up, everyone. You've waded through the cold temps in February and the rainy weather in March. Now the longer, warmer days are finally on their way. Jared, spring means sunshine. Spring means flowers. We're seeing all that right now. But for someone like you, it can also mean the yellow pollen is back on your windshield.
Yeah, allergies are terrible this time of year, and it doesn't look like it's going to get any better. And by all accounts, it's even going to get worse. But I don't have to worry about that, because I have the Impure Thunderstorm, because I get that clean, ionized air, which kills allergens and pollutants wherever I want it, in my house, in my car, here at the office. That's the best thing about the Thunderstorm, is it's not some giant thing that looks like a jet engine. It's something you just carry in one hand, and you plug it into a wall, or you plug it into your car with a USB cable into the USB port. You turn it on, you get it, you get that allergy relief that you need.
Yes, indeed. And I want you guys to get the three-pack. So the three-pack special is such a great deal. I want my listeners to get their hands on it before it ends. Here's what you need to do. I want you to go to EdenPureDeals.com and use code GRACE3. This is a great way to eliminate kitchen odor. It's a great way to eliminate musty, damp smells in your basement. And it's a great way to keep the office air purified and moving, so you don't get that stagnant kind of heavy air. You want to keep it fresh in the office. Even if you can't open the windows, which I know we can't hear, you can still keep the air moving with the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. So go to EdenPureDeals.com. Use code GRACE and the number 3 today. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. Bob Kraft yesterday announced that he's pulling support from Columbia University after seeing all the anti-Semitism on campus. That was actually going to be the poll question, Jared. I'm wondering if, because we've seen this film before where, you know, Bill Ackman and other billionaires pull money from schools, from universities that they had previously been massive donors for. And I applaud them for doing that. I think it's wonderful. I don't know how effective it is in the immediate future as far as hitting these universities where it hurts. They have massive endowments. I always go back to Harvard. They have over $1 billion in endowments. And I don't think it changes anything. immediately for them. But I will say, I do think it puts pressure on the president. Like, we saw this at Harvard with Claudine Gay. Obviously, her plagiarism issues caught up with her as well. And we saw MIT, though. MIT, I believe, is Kornbluth, right? And she's still there. But this recent wave of scientists against genocide that's taking over MIT, that might once again put her in the spotlight for reasons that she shouldn't be proud of. So perhaps she is at risk of losing her position there. But I think if more people like Bob Kraft, and also donors who aren't Jewish, but who just don't like to see this kind of vitriol and hate running rampant on the campuses, if everyone pulled their donations, I do think you'd see some real change. But right now, I don't think you're going to see that. One thing I wanted to mention, though, about the scientists against genocide, this was at MIT. So all of these schools, they all get wind that, oh, you know, did you hear about what's going on at NYU? And the NYPD came, and did you hear about what's going on at Columbia? They were chanting, "We are Hamas," and they all want to get in on it, you know, and no school wants to be left out of the trend, this trend of hating Jews. So naturally, MIT wants to hop on board, and they have this group called Scientists Against Genocide Encampment. That's the encampment. Everybody's got tents. I was talking to Emma about this yesterday. Very quick access to tents. Do you have a tent, Jared, like on standby?
No.
Do you have a sleeping bag on standby?
I think I do have a sleeping bag in the garage somewhere.
I don't know if they require the sleeping bags. I don't know if anyone's sleeping in the tents or if they're just setting them up. The last time I saw this many tents, it was, what was that thing called when I was in college? It was, they were against capitalism.
Oh, Occupy Wall Street?
Occupy Wall Street. Because I was at Providence, speaking of Providence College, and they set up in downtown Providence, and it was a bit of a mess, as you can imagine. Very stinky situation. I don't think the encampments at these schools have gotten to that level yet. It's still pretty early on, but there's still hope. I mean, we're at the beginning of this. So the Scientists Against Genocide encampment is set up at MIT, okay? And this got me thinking. You keep hearing this word thrown out, that Israel's committing genocide. Israel's committing genocide. And it's not just from Looney Tunes on college campuses. You hear this from Congress people. You hear this from leaders around the world. Israel's committing genocide. And I do think it is very important, when you're going to toss something out like that, you should be able to back it up. You should be able to pound the facts in that case. If you're going to accuse Israel, our ally in the Middle East, of committing genocide, you should be able to explain why. And Joe Rogan tried to do that. He was interviewing this academic, Coleman Hughes, who actually went to Columbia. And Coleman Hughes shut it down pretty quickly. Can I have cut 8, please?
When you're killing 30,000 innocent civilians in response to something that killed 1,200 innocent civilians, and you're continuing to bomb an area into oblivion, that is at least the steps of genocide, or a form of genocide.
So when you say 30,000 civilians, it's not 30,000 civilians that have been killed, though.
How many thousands have been killed?
So according to Gaza Health Ministry, which is run by Hamas, the number they have is 32,000, but they don't distinguish between Hamas and civilians.
How many members of Hamas are there?
40,000, something like that. I don't think the number is known, but it's tens of thousands. So Hamas says 32,000 people have been killed, civilians and soldiers. Israel says 13,000 soldiers have been killed by Israel. Okay. So let's not doubt either number. They could both be inflated. But if both of those numbers are accurate, which they may or may not be, that would be 13,000 soldiers killed, 19,000 civilians killed, which for urban combat in the Middle East is a very normal ratio. It's very distinct from genocide, because genocide is when you're trying to maximize civilian casualties. I think Israel, however imperfectly, is doing the opposite. They're trying to minimize civilian casualties.
Yeah. And that's the part of this that nobody wants to talk about. And, you know, David Harsanyi wrote it once. He said, Israel has to be right like 100% of the time, you know, and nobody's trying to claim that Israel's perfect or that the IDF does everything perfectly, but they're not trying. They're not going out of their way to kill civilians. It's hard when Hamas is using civilians as human shields, but they're certainly not doing what Hamas did, which was attacking Israelis on a random morning while they were feeding their kids breakfast and killing parents in front of their children and children in front of their parents, and then raping women and dragging them around the streets. That's not what's going on here, and that's what nobody wants to actually talk about. So it's important to know what genocide means. We have more from that and so much more to get to in the last hour. Don't go anywhere.